Hello and welcome to Hello Agent. I'm your host, Alex, founder and CEO of Redpanda. On this podcast, we sit down with builders at the frontier of AI, hands-on keyboard engineers designing and deploying real agentic systems. We cut through the hype to understand how the systems actually work, the architectures, the trade-offs, and the hard problems that you only discovered in production. At Redpanda, we're building the agentic data plane. We unlock private data for the Global 2000 with connectivity, context, and governance agents need to operate safely at scale. Learn more about it at redpanda.com. All right, let's get into it. Welcome back, everyone. My name is Alex. I am your host to the Hello Agent podcast. This podcast, we want to bring experts, people's hands-on keyboard, actually building the systems of the future. And today I have a very special guest and a friend, Dom. Welcome to the show. Super excited to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Alex. Thanks for having me.
It's been great. I've been thinking about this session for a while now. So today we're obviously going to talk about the deep ends of durable execution. I was just, you know, in preparation for this conversation, I was watching your Strange Loop talk. And I think you have this obsession on making things simple. One of the lines, which we'll talk about it in a little bit more, you said, failure agnostic definition guarantees a failure tolerant execution. And that's such a, to me, like such a strong category of the stuff that we're going to talk about today, especially in the light of agents, especially when agents may take days, may take weeks. We're going to talk about, you know, this long life cycles of durable execution. Before we get into that, welcome to the show. Wanted to let, you know, you give you the opportunity to introduce yourself and maybe learn a little bit more about, you know, Dom, the Dominic officially, but I call you Dom, the human, you know, hands-on keyboard builder working on Resonate. Dom, anything that you want to share with the audience about how did you end up working on this idea of durable execution?
So then it's like after the first year, then I was able to basically, I even asked myself the question, what is my ideal interpretation of durable executions? And then after another year, so 2 years in total, I left Temporal and started Resonate. So at that time, I basically came up with that notion that it's like a durable execution is a failure agnostic definition, basically the code that leads to a failure tolerant execution. However, I have since also moved slightly away from that because what I was unhappy about is that it is so failure focused, and that is an unnecessary restriction, and so. Now I'm calling it an interruption. And an interruption can either be voluntary or involuntary. Voluntary, for example, if you say, I'm going to sleep. I'm going to sleep for a week, or I'm going to sleep until some event happens. And that is a voluntary interruption. That's not failure. And so now I landed at the definition of it's an interruption agnostic definition that leads to an interruption tolerant execution.
That is such a gem. But speaking about having clarity to kick us off, obviously this podcast is about agents. I'll start out with the definition that I tend to align with in terms of agents, because I think it's three things. It is a prompt that you write. It is basically tokens that you purchase. And then it is a set of tools, effectively in a for loop. That's it. You know, one, do you align with this definition? And two, where does durable execution come into this whole idea of like, what is an agent?
So the way I look at agents is, so first I'd like to make a difference between an agent and an agent instance. So for agents, I like to make that distinction and say, it's like an agent is a tuple. It's a tuple of a model. That model gives the agent basically the reasoning capabilities. Then it is a set of tools. And it is a system prompt. Now, you can argue that the set of tools is not actually a first-class citizen. It's just an injection into the system prompt that lets the agent know what tools are available, what parameters they have, and what effects they have. But from a systems engineering perspective, tools are so important for agents and agent instances that we generally like elevate it to a first-class citizen. So it's a tuple of model, tool, and system prompt. And the system prompt is basically what defines the role of the agent. And then if you wanna extend that to an agent instance, to an actually live thing, right, you have to basically do two things. You have to give it a history. That's basically an ongoing conversation, and you have to give it an identity. And that identity is basically an identifier. And from there, you can actually, with this definition, you can do so very much. Yeah. You can, for example, reason about what happens if mid-conversation I change the model, right? Which you can do. It's like, is that still the same agent? Well, by definition, the agent is the same agent as long as we keep the same identity, right? So we give it the same identifier. It already gets the same history as before, right? Therefore, if the model is not like completely off, it will just continue the conversation. Therefore, it is basically still the same agent instance. The same idea
although to pressure test this idea, I feel it's true. There are limits to this, and the limit is the memory. So effectively, right, like this tends to be true for perhaps shorter-lived agents, but for longer-lived things or where like compaction kicks in, actually, if you have compaction and a different model, then you may get entirely different behaviors based on like whatever, you know, the memory was compacted to. So I just kind of wanted to pressure test this assumption if that continues to be true, because I guess maybe one difference and perhaps what we'll have a chance at exploring in today's conversation is that agents are such a different way of thinking about the world than the way like you and I grew up building, you know, with this distributed systems. They were deterministic, first of all. At least you work really hard to make them deterministic. That was like, you know, speaking of, I think I remember you wrote some like TLA plus proofs, and then you work on here on some like, you know, deterministic simulation testing for the Resume framework. So you, speaking to someone who spent a large part of your professional life working on determinism in particular, just because like, you know, the context window has such like an effect on the output of what the agent decides to do. And that part feels different to me, you know, when I'm building agents. I don't know if that resonates with you.
Very much, because you can actually use the very same formula to reason about compaction. Because compaction, the very idea of compaction is that you take the history, you apply a transformation to this history, but you want the same agent, right? So now you can basically argue that compaction is supposed to establish an equality or an equivalence relationship, right? And so the agent instance is supposed to be still the same agent instance. However, we are all always super disappointed because we feel it's not, right? And that is a great part if you basically boiled something down to the very, very principles of and the very foundational building blocks of what it is, then you can start reasoning about these like concepts, like, for example, agents, like compaction, like what happens, what if I swap out a model, what actually is prompt engineering, and so on and so forth. You can capture that in a few like very succinct formulas that just paint a very clear mental model, a very clear picture. And yes, you're absolutely right. You always have to take that and map it against reality and see if it captures reality well, right? But if it does capture reality well, then you are adding another mental model to your tool belt that is accurate, concise, and just super dependable. And that's basically where my entire frustration came from, that I never had that. And then it's like from here on out, and it's like there was a point where I say, I will not rest. If I have a question, I will not rest until I have a sentence that says, a concept is dot, dot, dot. And that happened with durable executions the same way that it happens with agents and agents instances. I just don't stop until I have a mental model where I can say, okay, now I can reason about the world with this mental model.
And maybe the byproduct of it is that I forgot who was like famous for this, but it's like maybe it shouldn't be consequential if we had like an unlimited context window where you could just write a petabyte of data and the model would be able to efficiently like, you know, you start to run into database problems just because like it's hard to manage that kind of size of data. To dig in here into items, help me understand, why is durable execution an important primitive for people that are building invincible agents that, to use your language, survive interruptions?
So that is, you know, when AI came about, right? And especially LLMs, when LLMs came about. But then, like, let's move into an enterprise environment where we talk about continuous autonomy, right? Agents that just run, agents that just call tools. Tools can take a long time. Just like, hey, yeah, if I have a local MCP server and that MCP server asks for the weather, and that call is a 500 millisecond call, it's like, yeah, I can hang on to that TCP connection. That's fine. But if I have an agent in an enterprise that just kicked off a data pipeline that's going to crunch for 8 hours, it's like, what? It's like, are you going to pin that agent to that machine and to that particular TCP connection? And if that TCP connection crashes, there's like, yeah, good luck joining whatever you started. Usually we don't. We always restart from the top, right? It doesn't work exactly anymore.
Yeah? Right, right.
So now we very quickly come to the conclusion that this like continuous autonomy is a distributed systems problem, right? Not that much of an agentic problem, or at least not more of an agentic problem than agentic problems locally. But they very quickly, continuous autonomy adds like distributed systems problem. And that's where durable executions come in, right? It's
well,
still
you
the
know,
loop.
And to add to this, like even like the fact, like even having the ability to kick off a pipeline, you know, this weekend I was just chatting with a couple engineering friends with the whole OpenClaw acquisition by OpenAI. And it's like super cool. And I basically, it's like, that is what a CIO has like nightmares about. It's basically, it's like a panic because yeah, in many ways, perhaps like the local agent just is such like an oversimplification of what feels, and maybe the struggle that people are having today is not only do they not have the clarity, like we talked about, you know, this tuple in a for loop of like agent system prompt and tools, but it's also the gap from there to getting into production. There was like this, you know, where the real things happen. It's like access controls and governance and auditing and security. And like, then you have weird compliance laws. Like, well, you know, maybe even relevant in this world, which is like, this data shall not leave this geographic region or whatever it is. Like those feel like the things. And so in your world, it feels like this second part that is just as important is like the distributed system part. This part, which is like, okay, so you kicked off an 8-hour pipeline. And by the way, some of these pipelines are expensive. And so tell me more. Let's dig into the concept. I was like, okay, so you've launched this. Now the TCP connection may not be there, right? Like it may have been interrupted, to use the Dominic's language here. What happens? Where does this durable execution then kicks in? Like what is the, how do we help the world reason through these interruptions?
Okay. I would like to pick up on what because I just can't help myself, on one thing that you mentioned when it comes to like the security, the governments and all that. And that's what I like to call, these are the agentic challenges, right? And then it's like, you have that challenge, whether you run locally or whether you run in a distributed setting. Right? And then the question is, what is the core? What is the very core of that challenge? And that is super interesting to me. It is two conflicting goals. And that's so common in software engineering. We always have two conflicting goals. Yeah? So it's like, or more, but it's usually two conflicting goals. So, and here it is autonomy versus alignment. Right? I want the agent for its autonomy because I want the agent to basically just go, 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 do your thing and come back with the thing that I wanted. But that's now the alignment problem, right? It's just like, that I wanted. And it's like, how do we actually get there, right? So it's like, yeah, the more autonomy we give to an agent, the more we create the chance and also the likelihood that the agent is actually not aligned anymore. And as you said, it's like, hey, it moved the data. It exfiltrated the data from one region to another region. It may not even be malicious, right? But it exfiltrated the data from one region to another region. It's not aligned with my wishes, but I gave it the autonomy to do it, right? So, and that is for me the agentic challenge. It is a balance between autonomy and alignment. And then the distributed systems challenge is what you mentioned. And durable executions do not at all address the agentic challenge. Like, nada, not even a little, right? But they basically address the distributed system challenge that enterprise agents have, right? And that is exactly as you mentioned. So let's actually say we have a multi-agent system, right? Let's crank it up a notch. So we have a multi-agent system, and that is basically a distributed call graph, a distributed call graph of agents invoking other agents or tools. And they do that recursively, right? Think of a distributed deep research agent that takes a research question, then breaks the question down into sub-questions and calls itself recursively on these sub-questions. And the agent also has tools, right? Like, for example, access to certain databases, access to data pipelines, so that it can generate the answer, either retrieve or generate the answer that it was looking for. And now you have a call graph, and by God, that is a complex call graph. Agents, that's like from a distributed systems perspective, they don't just inherit distributed systems problems. They like massively increase them. They amplify them, right? Because number one, everything takes a lot of time, right? So it's like now you have the root of the call graph calling something else, calling something else, calling something else, right? LLMs themselves are not the fastest, and none of that is cheap. The LLM burns through tokens. They are not cheap. If a data pipeline takes like a $10,000, you better not just kick off a retry because one TCP connection crashed, right? So basically, our normal microservice thinking is, okay, we have a distributed call graph, and let's not make it too complicated, yeah? But we have a distributed call graph, and this function calls that function, calls that function, calls that function. Well, if anything in this call graph goes wrong, guess what we do? The caller of the failed function is basically also doubling as the supervisor and just restarting, right? So, and everything that happens underneath the failure point, whether that actually failed or didn't fail, who cares? Let's just retry, right? Because it's like every single function call is basically for free and it only takes a few milliseconds. So it's just not worry about it and like take it from the top. It's like if you have agents that are in themselves like expensive and they call expensive tools, it's like there's just no way, right? So what you really want to do is you want to very carefully manage that call graph and be able to be interruption tolerant. And more than just for failure's sake, that is why I upgraded my definition from failure tolerant to interruption tolerant. If this agent here, it's like has to wait for, I don't know, 4 hours, 8 hours anyways, until all of the children and children's complete, why should that agent ever be pinned onto a process hogging resources, right? And then also making sure that the process cannot go away, because as soon as you're launched, you're actually like you pin the topology. So none of that is attractive, right? The agents itself, why can the agent itself, the tool loop, why can that not run on, for example, serverless functions? Turns out it can. If you use durable executions, which are interruption agnostic, right? Well, you can basically just write your code as if interruption doesn't exist.
Just like here to add a point of clarity for those listening in, there is like, it feels though there is this tension. The tension that you're mentioning here is like, you have pipelines that may cost $10,000 to run. And at the same time, you're saying like, hey, the thing that spawns it should be a serverless function. So like, how do you like reconcile the world?
Reconcile in what sense?
So in other words, like you don't want to be kicking off a bunch of pipelines that are worth $10,000 all the time, right? Like that was sort of the core thesis here. And at the same time, you're saying that the caller could just be, you know, launch on a serverless function. So wouldn't by definition, I guess, you know, intuitively, just trying to peel the level of the onion here one more time. Like what is the mechanics of this system that allows an engineer or a system builder, you don't even have to be an engineer, just stays with Claude code. You could just like use this framework, right? But what is it like? What are the underlying mechanics? Like, is it like a transactional system? Like, help me understand, like, what pieces of information do you need to store? Like, how do you store progress? How do you store state? What is the intuition that we can share with the world that says the caller can be on a serverless function, even if it is calling a $10,000 pipeline, and you guarantee that you're not going to start like 100 of those at the same time.
That is actually where Resonate differs from other durable execution platforms and durable execution frameworks. So it's like one of the problems that I had with existing solutions, like, for example, Temporal, was that they always felt very complex to me. There's like their programming model was complex, was proprietary. It felt overwhelming to me. And when you think about durable executions, it's like, I just want to be interruption tolerant, right? So it's like, if you look at, for example, database transactions, you can write a database transaction as if failure didn't happen and if nobody else was on the database, right? That's the magic of it. So, but the programming model itself for databases is also simple and easy to understand, right? And I understand that there is complicated machinery in databases, but just like if you boil it down to the database is the log, then not even that is that complicated, right? So I was like, I can fairly quickly wrap my head around it. Of course, how to really efficiently implement logs, the details, they get pretty complicated. But the general, like the picture doesn't look too hard. So that's basically what I wanted with Resonate. Instead of like a different, like very proprietary programming model, you was like, since the 1960s, we have functions, and functions called functions called functions called other functions, right? Then since the 1970s, we added promises. So now we have functions and promises are a universal abstraction for coordination. So now we can express concurrency. So we have functions, a universal abstraction for computation. We have promises, a universal abstraction for coordination. It's all in all of our programming languages, right? There's like async await is basically in TypeScript, is in JavaScript, in Python. Go went a different direction, but Kotlin is like C#, F#. Name your poison, they probably have support for async await. So as I was thinking, is like, let's take that and lift it into the distributed durable world, right? So now what is the mechanic behind it? The mechanic behind it is durable promises, right? So a durable promise is something with a stable identity. It's a deterministically generated hierarchical identity that defines one point in a call graph. And because this durable promise has an external identity, it's a URL, right? It just lives basically on a server. You can do two things with it. Number one, it's a universal abstraction for coordination, but now it's also the universal abstraction for recovery. If you restart something, right, and that promise already exists, you just rejoin that promise, and that promise represents a computation, right? So if that promise represents a data pipeline, then I can basically just restart, and now I'm rejoining that data pipeline that I already started. But it's also a universal abstraction for coordination. So if I'm gonna await on that durable promise, I can hard suspend, I can interrupt, I can just go away. As soon as that durable promise is resolved, then it's like I can restart my or resume my computation.
And so basically, just to play back, what you're saying is you simplified the model to functions and to promises, basically to this distributed async await. And so on a, like if you're writing a function and you're an engineer, you would say like, you know, function process data. Inside, you would say like await pipeline. And the moment that you call await, before it actually calls the thing and triggers the thing downstream, it like registers this like global identity that then can be resumed in any server. And therefore, that is like this global identity gives the engineer the ability to suspend or interrupt the physical placement. And like you could physically, like Amazon, if you use the word, you know, Amazon's Lambda here, can be spawned in a physically different computer, because what's happened is that the pipeline is returning the results. Often it's like a file on S3 or like, you know what I mean? Like whatever, like it returns the like, it's not synchronous from a file system perspective. It is like a sequential programming model, but it is like a distributed execution. And so anyway, so when the identity returns, when the file has finished uploading. In other words, like when the pipeline says like your report is available at X, there is a verifiable step, which is like there is a report that is called report.pdf on this particular file system on S3. That is the result of this $10,000 pipeline. And so that's like this global registering and global identifiers of this coordination promise concept allows this durable execution to separate the physical world. Like I am running on server A during interruption. So post interruption, it could resume the same identity. It can say like, I am X, but in a physically different server. Did I get it right?
100%. That's exactly what it is.
So like, you know, help me understand, like what's different about this, like, you know, distributed async way from actors?
Actors absolutely solve a state problem. Similar way like the durable executions solve a state problem. But actors present a very different programming model. Actors are super, super cool. If you have, for example, one message comes in and you can process that message in this activation of the actor, awesome. So it's like you have no headaches whatsoever. If you cannot, now the headaches really start. Because now basically the message comes in, right? And then, for example, you trigger something else because of it and you now need to register the fact that you're waiting on something. And all of a sudden, what are you doing? You're basically building a state machine, right? Event-driven system, you're building event-driven application. So you're building a state machine. You are managing the control flow yourself now. Now, if you have a sequential programming model, right? The control flow is managed for you. And that control flow can get very, very complicated. Think of a try-catch in a for loop, in a try-catch with an if. That actually is very simple to write, but the control flow machinery around that is actually very, very hard. If you have to do that manually in a state machine, that's not going to be fun. Check out that state machine to see what very simple Rust code can look like once you transform it from a sequential-looking code into event-driven code.
My point was that it felt easier to me than when I was writing actors, and maybe just like the way my brain works, that like you basically, in many ways, like nothing really changes. Like that there's a little bit that changes, that you are writing a wait and you are writing like, you know, return a future or whatever. You do have to resolve the promise. But by and large, most code, like 99% of the code, doesn't look any different. It's only the coordination points. Just like you would with, you know, a lock or a concurrency problem, like you would have to like, you know, whatever, mutex that unlock. Like something has to call that thing to make progress. But by and large, the rest of the code feels different to me. And I think there's like an understated value in the durable promise land, is that it looks mostly the same. Like you don't have to learn a new thing.
That was absolutely one of my goals, because like I asked myself basically, what is my ideal programming model? My ideal programming model is the sequential programming model, right? Step one, step two, step three, step four. So it's basically the oldest programming model that we have, right? And so that programming model is the easiest to reason about. Now, of course, the sequential programming model does not allow us to express concurrency. And concurrency is, in our world, especially in a distributed world, is very important. It's like when you hang yourself on that TCP connection, everything is lost. As soon as you run, you pin it to that machine. So it's like it turned out that also moving from the concurrent non-distributed world to the concurrent distributed world is also a major disruption, not just a minor addition. Right? It's like often we just try to have a function that is like, do this, but then internally it does a fetch call or whatnot.
Yeah,
killer.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, what's to me the power was, like you write the code in a concurrent way and you separate the physical simultaneous execution of the code to the runtime. It doesn't come for free. There is like definitely cognitive overhead for the engineer building the systems. But if I were to synthesize this down, because we're here at the top of the hour, it would be, there's like these agentic challenges around governance that exist today, regardless or not you're using a durable execution framework. the durable execution framework for people building agents is that when you have a multi-agent system, you have a distributed system problem. And when you have a distributed system problem, you have this like very difficult to deal with concepts like partial failure, like visibility and retries, service discovery, like physical execution. Is this pin? Is this not? You know, actually understandability of the system, prove that the thing works, and so on and so on. And given that that you've moved from a deterministic to a non-deterministic model execution, right? Like you move from like literally writing like 1 + 1 = 2 to asking a model, and most of the time it will return 2 unless it returns something else, right? Like why would it return something else? And so if it assumes JavaScript, it may return 11 because it could assume like, you know, a string concatenation. And so my point here is that like for people that are dialing in, that are trying to understand how does durable execution help with AI, is the minute you have a multi-agent, multi-term system, you have a hard distributed system, like, you know, visibility, service discoverability problems, retries. And that's really where your projects like resonate. But at the end of the day, what you're explaining here, you're like, hey, listen, this distributed async await is actually more foundational than resonate. All I'm saying is that this is a mental model for you to go build on agents. This is an open source project that people are welcome to use. But I think what feels like long-lasting value to people dialing in is that you were able to reduce what felt like inordinate complexity you mentioned with, you know, alternatives with activities and workloads and like, and basically constraints around like who can call what and who. You're like, no, listen, this is just straight up Python code if you're running it. And you write this like suspension points, which look exactly the same. You know, you're doing like, you know, await this call, await that call. And what a durable framework that is, you know, focused on this, you know, promise, distributed async await to be exact, gives you is the ability to survive failures. It like raises the programming level of abstraction to something that is a couple of clicks above that lets you like separate the physical execution of where these agents are running to the end observable result. And what this framework gives you is the ability to observe the result of the agent or not. And anything in between, you sort of discard it.
That was a great summary. So it's like, as Resonate, we cannot help you with the agentic challenge, right? You have to balance autonomy and alignment. But once you figured out how to realize continuous autonomy in your setting, continuous autonomy in your enterprise, Resonate can help you to actually roll it out and execute it reliably. And so while the agentic challenge is a challenge, rolling out the agent in your enterprise and executing it reliably is not a challenge anymore, right? So that challenge is addressed by Resonate.
Man, having the ability to just say that, like the ability of simplifying so many concepts into a few hundred lines of code is a gift. Dom, thank you. We could talk forever. You know, I wanted to probe here, but we run out of time, which is like visibility in the presence of external systems. You're like, okay, that this one gets hard, which is like, and so we'd love to have you back in the show at some point, which is like, how do we help people see outcomes just once in the presence of external systems, in the presence of having to update Salesforce, in the presence of having to update SAP, in the presence, right? Because you have basically these largely non-cooperative systems with like, you know, the world trying to bend you to your knees, crashing servers, having, you know, a bunch of interruptions, both voluntary and involuntary. And yet the job is like, no one cares from the outside. I mean, like system engineers, you know, we all care deeply about the stuff that we work on, but customers don't. They're like, I need my, you know what I mean? Like, listen, I'm trying to do a transaction, your problem. And so we'd love to bring it back in and maybe we'll get a chance at exploring like, what are some of these lessons learned and primitives that we could do, that we could take this as we bring in external systems into the fold? Because that, I think there's a lot of nuance and richness in that topic. But with that, Dom, Thank you so much for coming to the show. It was really an honor to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
All right, then I'm looking forward to the next one.